This Is Actually Happening is sponsored by Airbnb. I travel often, and when I'm away, my home never sits empty. I've been an Airbnb host for over 10 years, and it's always been the perfect way to make a little extra money to help supplement my travels while I'm gone. You can even plan around events, like maybe there's a big tournament coming to town and lots of fans will be visiting. You could Airbnb your home or extra room and make some extra money. Your home or spare room might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the home of storytelling. In addition to an incredible selection of audiobooks, you'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive Audible originals from top celebrities, renowned experts, and exciting new voices in audio. Currently, I'm listening to Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran after seeing the film and wanting to know more about the story. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/happening or text happening to 500-500. That's audible.com/happening or text happening to 500-500. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic, 1984, on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Ilan Ishkeri that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've ever heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
This Is Actually Happening features real experiences that often include traumatic events. Please consult the show notes for specific content warnings on each episode and for more information about support services.
And the hardest part is I still don't have any answers. It was 26 years ago, and I see it like it's yesterday. I have the same question I had then. What came into my house that night?
From Wondery, I'm Whit Mistledine. You are listening to This Is Actually Happening.
Episode 103. What if you had a 10-year nightmare?
This Is Actually Happening is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This first incident that happens, and this is kind of, in literature, they call it the inciting incident. It's that, event or decision that begins the story's problem. this event, this decision, it's kind of the beginning of my story. I'm 5 years old, and I'm riding my bike through the neighborhood. Actually, it wasn't my bike. It was my sister's bike. I didn't have one of my own yet. And this teenage kid next door called me over, and he said, "Hey, man, we're going to play this game, and you got to come into the garage. We're going to play this game, and it's going to be really fun. You'll enjoy it." I feel like that moment is that inciting incident in my life, the event of him asking and the decision for me to say yes and go in the garage. And basically he said, "We're going to play this game," and he ended up tying me down to this chair. So my hands were tied down. I don't even remember if they were behind my back. I just remember that I couldn't move. And I was just terrified. And this kid just screaming in my face and yelling at me, and he was slapping me in the face really hard. And really the only things that I remember are not being able to move my arms, his angry face, him slapping me really hard. That's pretty much it. Looking back on it, I didn't remember there being any sexual abuse. And so I just kind of wrote it off. Like it wasn't any big deal. After he untied me, I'm running across, this was next door. This was right next door to our house, running across the grass away from him, and him just yelling after me. So I went home. I was crying. I was upset. I was terrified. And I told my mom what he'd done, and just, she did absolutely nothing. And then soon after that story, not long after that, about a year or two later, I was introduced to porn. And I was in third grade. I was over at a friend's house. There were probably three or four of us. And we went into the dad's room, and there's a Playboy sitting on the bedside table. And I remember the kid picking it up, like, "Yeah, this is my dad's," you know, and kind of threw it on the bed. And the other people kind of looked at it. Other kids kind of looked at it and then just kind of walked away. And I remember opening it, and just, it was like heroin. It was like just my whole body just filling up with magic. I think those two incidents in my life, the garage and that magazine, were really key in how the next 30 or 40 years of my life kind of unfolded. I think what I learned is that the world is an unsafe place, and that even the people I trust and love can't keep me safe. I can't keep me safe. No one can. But there's this thing that can make me feel good. This thing can be mine. I grew up in a religious home. I grew up actually in the Lutheran church. I just remember feeling deeply when I was young about wanting to love and to please God. And that was a big thing in my early life. But grew up with a mom and a dad and a sister. And, you know, there was this real feel that everything was perfect and together. 50s, 60s, 70s mentality of this perfect family, you know, on the outside. And it wasn't that way. I just remember feeling sad a lot of my young life. I remember kind of just feeling disconnected from myself. My dad was loving, but he was distant much of the time. He was a World War II kid. He had a shitty dad, and I think he didn't know how to be a dad, and I know that he did the best he could. So I have good memories of him growing up, but I also remember kind of feeling disconnected from him and like he was just out doing his own thing. I remember hearing from my mom later that she was afraid to have a boy. There were no boys in her house growing up. So I think she just didn't know what to do with me. I use the term rageaholic. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but she had a real Jekyll and Hyde character. And I just remember her getting so angry. Her face would change, you know? I would say I would be in the kitchen, and I could just, I could see her face just turn into that other person. I must have wondered why at some point, or maybe at that age I didn't wonder why, but I think I internalized a lot of her anger. I learned to just stuff my own feelings down and to kind of take on her feelings and to carry her weight. I remember when I got older, just feeling a lot of rage about not being able to express my own anger and my own feelings. But I think when I was younger, I think I just sucked it all up like a sponge. Her rage was so unpredictable that one minute things were great, and all of a sudden she's just yelling at the top of her lungs or reaching out to slap one of us or spank one of us. And I think that's part of the trauma for me too, is how quickly that could change. I remember my mom, you know, slapping me in the face, and she didn't burn me. She didn't, you know, hit me with a belt or whatever. But still, when something comes near my face, I think that it's going to hit me. When I went to bed and felt afraid, I always used sexual thoughts to make me feel better. And for me, as a third grader, fourth grader, fifth grader, I was always fantasizing about adult women. It was really never about, you know, women my age. The porn just became a thing of seeking that out finding it sometimes, not finding it sometimes, but sexual thoughts. And with the religious upbringing, you can probably see where this is going. Like, it's not exactly a marriage ordained by God. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think just what began to emerge for me is this disconnection from myself and others, especially with girls and women my age, just feeling horrible about myself looking at porn as I got older and feeling like I was a bad person because I was looking at it. And then I didn't date much at all in high school. My parents were really strict, and also I'd kind of found my thing. And instead of learning at that time to, you know, push through that fear of being, you know, a dork, being an adolescent, asking girls out, dating and physical intimacy and sex, instead of doing that, I just hid out. And then there was the Christian part, that premarital sex is wrong. And in one sense, I felt like I was kind of taking the high road, that porn was bad, but having sex was even worse. So I was kind of patting myself on the back that I wasn't having sex when a lot of my other friends were. Through my high school years, I started to really feel this disconnection from my dad. I didn't like him. I didn't want to be near him. And even before that, I saw something that I really resented, which was him ogling other women, looking at other women besides my mom. And I used to get so angry at him. And then when I started coming into my own, again, not feeling like this is anything tremendously rare that never happens with teenage boys, but I just pulled away more and more from my dad, and I couldn't even stand to be around him. My relationship with my mom evolved in sort of similar fashion. She was very controlling. I was trying to find my power and my freedom. And 17, I went away to college, and at 18, I fell in love for the first time. And I found someone just like my mom. She had that Jekyll and Hyde quality, totally on board one day, totally angry at me about something the next. And I always felt like it was me, there was something wrong with me, and it wasn't her issue, it was my issue. And we dated all through college. We went through the roller coaster. We'd break up, we'd get back together. For 5 years, we did that pretty much all through college. And we were Christian kids, so we never had sex. It was always everything but guilt about it. But again, feeling justified, feeling superior to my other friends that were having sex. And I was just doing porn. And when I graduated, I had an opportunity to either go to Seattle and join a band or to join her where she was and try and figure out, supposedly once and for all, if we were meant to be or not. As if the universe hadn't given us enough signs that this was not working. But because this was the first one, I wasn't keen on that at this point. So I did decide to move down 2 hours to this other city to be with her. I moved in with a college friend that had just graduated as well. And she and I broke up the last time a month or two later. So here I am in this new city. I've got a new job and a serious relationship breakup. And so for the first time, I just felt completely lost. I found a place by myself, and suddenly I was living alone. And now I was alone for the very first time in my life at night. I'd just gotten this job. I was working at a church. I was a youth minister and a music minister at a church. And this is when it started. It started with this feeling of not being safe. So I would go to bed at night, loving the feeling of being home and having my own place. But as soon as the lights went out, I noticed that I was starting to check the doors and the windows obsessively, making sure the doors were locked. I had blinds in my room, and I was really obsessive to make sure that the blind was coming all the way down to the windowsill. Now I needed all these blankets on top of me. I needed pillows at the foot of the bed over my feet. And I just, it was like this feeling was pressing in that I was trying to feel safe. And there was just, at night, I just couldn't do it. And then I had this dream. I opened my eyes. I think I'm awake. My whole house is dark, or my apartment. I have to go to the bathroom. So I sit up on the bed and I stand up. And I'm moving really slow. I can take a step about every 30 seconds, and I don't know why I can't move. And in the other room, I hear this voice. There's no lights on in the house. And then there's this entity that's there that's come inside. And I finally make it out to the living room, and my dad is sitting on the couch. He's in his underwear, and he's sitting Indian style on the couch. And I can see him in the dark. I can see his silhouette in the dark. And I know that it's my dad, but I know that it's not him. And all this time, he's been saying this long string of words, just one after another without a pause. Just none of it makes any sense. It's just this one long random sentence. And he's looking at me there in the dark. It just felt like evil. And in the dream, I'm terrified. I know this thing has come into my house, and I tell it, you know, you need to leave. You need to get out of here. And he laughs and he says something like, oh, what's the matter? And and he goes right back to that big, long, meaningless sentence of words. And I walk back into my room at regular speed now. And I said, you need to go. And I was afraid, but I was angry now too. And soon after that, I wake up. And so when I woke up, I knew that it was a dream. But at that time, I thought I was awake. And after that dream, the fear at night just amped up. It felt like something had slipped in to my house. And I started sleeping with all the lights on, not just the bedroom light, but every light in the house had to be on. Like if there's two lights in the kitchen, both of them had to be on. No dark, no shadows in the house. And at some point, I realized that this fear wasn't about someone from the outside getting in. It was that something was already there, and I couldn't get away from it. And probably a week or two after that dream, I nailed up all these heavy blankets over my windows in my bedroom. And I recall that I was trying to create a womb. I was trying to make a place for myself that felt safe.
This Is Actually Happening is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Drained or half full or bursting with energy? Why is this? Are you overscheduling yourself or not putting up enough boundaries? It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. But how do you find the right amount of socializing for you?
Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. For me, therapy has been a godsend in learning how to manage myself as an extrovert who always wants to be engaged with people, but also finding alone time for myself to ground and find my center again. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/happening today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happening.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
So I remember the night the attacks started. I don't know what to call them. I'll just call them that. I had some friends over. We were all drinking. I was severely depressed at that time. I was drinking a lot. I was missing my girlfriend. I was in this city that didn't know a lot of people. I had church friends, and so I invited them over. And I remember just being really drunk, going into my room, laying down on my bed, and suddenly I just started moving. My body started moving, and it started slowly at first, and then it got more and more and more violent. Picture being a little kid, maybe 4 or 5, and picture just lying there on a bed, and picture an adult just grabbing you, say, by the clothes, and just violently shaking you, throwing you around, like back and forth. That's how it felt. I had a female friend that was there, and she was kind of trying to stop it, and I didn't really know what was going on, and she just kept saying, "You're okay, you're okay," and it went on for an hour or two of just not being able to control my body and feeling like somebody had taken over it. A night or two later, it happens again, and this starts to happen more and more. Now, though, it starts to develop this sort of ritual. The first thing that happens are my hands are pulled behind my back, so I can't move my hands or my arms. Sometimes one of my legs, I would say one or both of my legs sometimes were tied, like I was hogtied, like my arms are behind my back, one or both of my ankles is tied to my wrists. And so that was always the thing. That's always when I knew that was coming on, is I could feel my shoulders being pulled back. I can feel it right now when I'm talking. I remember just my hands being pulled behind my back, and almost always my left ankle would come up and they would all just meet in the back. I remember that when it went from these violent, really random shaking movement where it's like all of a sudden my hips are moving back and forth. And I remember thinking, "Oh my God, I'm being raped." During these episodes, my functioning mind would just sort of go away. I'd like just kind of tune out, and usually I would just close my eyes. And sometimes I'd see these flashes of light. They felt like kind of right at the center of my forehead. And I never had visuals. I never had visuals around it. I never had memories around it. But it was just my body moving in these really violent and really sexually violent motions. And I couldn't stop it. And so it's like my mind was split in two. And one part of my mind was like, "What the fuck is going on?" And the other side would just do this let go thing. Sometimes I would cry afterwards. And then sometimes it would just feel like I just vomited something out and I feel a lot better. So picture this. I mean, I'm working at a church. I mean, I'm teaching like high school kids the Bible, you know, and I'm leading worship. And here's this thing that's happening to me. I mean, it's like, what do you say? I mean, how do you tell someone about that? And so I had this little circle of friends who kind of knew what was going on, and they didn't they didn't know what to do. And I did have this close female friend. She and I had been friends for a couple years. And I started seeing her therapist because she was starting to uncover memories of her own of having been incested by her father. Her marriage was falling apart. She and I were getting closer and closer. We never dated. We were always just friends. But the fear at night just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. There were these violent attack things that were happening to my body when I was awake. But when I would fall asleep at night, I would just have these horrible dreams. In one of them, I'm fighting with my dad, where he and I are fist fighting, or we're just trying to beat each other up. A lot of them were just kind of just terrifying nightmare type stuff, that something was out to get me, that something was there, feeling like something is attaching itself to me. And even when the dreams themselves weren't violent, there was this component where while a normal dream was going on, just picture a normal dream that you have, I would feel myself being violently penetrated. So I'm in this regular dream, like I'm at school or I'm talking to people on the street. And while that's happening, there's this extreme pain of being anally raped. And sometimes it felt like a penis. Sometimes it felt like it was obviously like a finger. One time it was a pencil. There were times where it was pleasurable. There were certain times where that did feel good. I would guess that that was a handful of times, probably 5% of the time. But what I remember is just the agony where it didn't feel good at all. I remember one, whatever had been shoved in my ass just wasn't moving. It was just sitting there, but it was huge. And all night long, I went from dream to dream to dream, just talking to people, like regular dream interaction stuff, but trying to get this thing out and not being able to. Being religious, being Christian, I did wonder at some point if there was this spiritual element to it, if there was this demonic element to it. I had spoken with someone about this. This woman friend of mine, she said, "Oh, well, it's obvious. This is demon stuff." I went and saw these two guys who were supposedly well known for exorcism stuff, and it was just a mess. I think it just freaked me out. And when I would get freaked out and anxious, these things would happen. So they're interpreting it as, the demon's there, and I didn't buy into it that day, and I never really did buy into it again, at least religiously. But I did wonder later if psychically there were things that were attaching themselves to me. There's this third component that of what would happen between waking and sleeping. Oftentimes I'd wake up in the early in the morning, and then I'd fall back asleep. So it'd be like, say, maybe 5:30, 6 in the morning. And when I did, this thing would happen where I'd be lying there. I know I'm in my bed. My brain hasn't fallen asleep yet, but suddenly I can't move. And I don't know if you've heard of sleep paralysis, but this sounds like this. The awake stuff was horrible. The asleep stuff, equally horrible, frightening. These incidents, the things that happened between the waking and sleep, fear-wise, were the worst of all. I'd be lying there. My mind is completely conscious, but my body can't move. Sometimes I'd hear these loud clicks or pops in my head, like lightning. A number of times in this state, I could feel these entities that were clinging to me. I don't know what to call them. Two separate times that I recall. Once it was this thing, definitely wasn't human. It was small, like the size of like a medium-sized dog, but it had arms and legs. And it was wrapped around my torso from behind. And during these times, I would pray or I would sing. And often that would help me to wake up. But when I would do that, I would feel it loosening its grip, like it was trying to hold on to me and it was slipping away. And my asking for divine help was weakening it somehow. Another time, there were several of them on me. It felt like 7 or 8 of these things. And all of them kind of like that alien movie. These things were just attached onto certain parts of my body. That time I remember trying to sing trying to pray, and one of them actually reaching over and trying to hold my mouth closed so I couldn't. Other times, I'd hear voices in the room. I remember a child screaming one time, Daddy, no. And other times, there would be someone on top of me raping me. And one sticks in my head the most. I just call it the incident. If I were to kind of sum up all this stuff, all of these experiences in one incident, it would probably be this one. Lying in bed, it was probably 8:30 in the morning. Same thing. I was asleep on my back. I had just fallen asleep again after having been awakened. Just lying there, brain still awake, and I hear this music. And I just heard the orchestra. I heard his words coming up over the top. And my assumption in that moment is that the people upstairs were listening to Frank Sinatra and I was just hearing it come through the window. And all of a sudden the music stopped and I felt someone standing in the doorway of my room. I heard the door open and I'm lying there in bed and someone is standing in the doorway of my room. I can feel them. I can hear them standing there. He just walks over to the bed. He's standing over me. And that moment is probably the most frightened I've ever been in my life, because I know there's someone in the room standing over me and I can't move. There's nothing I can do. And I hear him take off his belt and he gets on top of me and starts raping me. I guess when I was in my 20s, you just roll with whatever shit happens, you know? And I think that's what I was trying to do. I felt out of control. It's just that feeling of utter powerlessness. It's the most awful feeling I've ever felt. It's the combination of fear and shame and sadness and rage, and they're all just equal. I was missing meetings. Like, what I remember was one night I was at this church meeting and I felt one of these things coming on. I could feel my shoulders start to be pulled. And what am I supposed to do in a meeting with a bunch of people that I've only known for a few months when all this is happening? And I just got in my car and drove home and I could barely drive. I'm driving a stick, barely drive because my arms are wanting to go behind my back, you know? And it just took everything I could to just get home, to just get to my bed. And immediately, that's, you know, the same thing that had happened 50 times before that. So that next day, I checked in with my pastor, told him what happened. I checked in with my therapist and ended up checking myself into a psychiatric facility. And I was there for 30 days. The experience was a positive one. I liked my therapist, you know, the group meetings, but looking back on it with respect to what was happening every day in my life at that time, it didn't help with any of it. Like I had two questions. Why is this happening? How can I make it stop? And those didn't get answered. It would seem natural to move towards the demonic or spiritual option. I didn't really do that. I moved more towards, and maybe this was because of my therapist, because of my friend who was going through recovering memories of her incest at the time. That's really what started to form for me. There was a conclusion that I found myself coming to. I was putting all these pieces together. I just found myself first wondering and then believing that my father had sexually abused me. I still had to sleep with all the blankets over me, pillows all around me, pillows on my feet. All these things also made physical relationships and dating and sex just next to impossible. If I was with a woman, kissing, making out, moving towards sex, and she got on top of me or did anything that made me feel like I was out of control, even for a split second, these violent body attacks would start. And I can't tell you how many sexual experiences at that time began with, so if this thing happens, you know, I would just kind of have to explain that I was going through this process. You know, surprisingly, The women that I remember, they didn't freak out and they didn't leave. And a number of them saw that thing happen. So it's like they don't know me from Adam, and they're watching me like violently writhe around on the bed. Most of them took it pretty well, actually. So during this time, I'd stopped talking with my parents altogether. Much of that was about my kind of rebellious nature and just needing to get away from them, needing to separate from them. I don't think I knew how to tell them about it, and I really didn't want to. So there's my dad, and I finally just decided I need to send him a letter and let him know what's going on. This process, kind of coming to that conclusion about my dad and then doing something about it, took 3 years. In the letter, I didn't accuse him of anything. I didn't say, here's what you did. I said, here's what's going on with me, and I wanted to let you know that. But it still did have an angry quality to it, and I think he picked up on that. And I think I said in the letter, it's going to take more than just you denying this for me to believe otherwise. About 3 weeks later, I got a letter back from him, and to me, it sounded defensive. And he admitted later that he was angry. He felt like I was just going, I don't think he really understood, but he felt like I was going through these problems and just blaming them on him. But we didn't speak for another 6 years after that. I don't know what I wanted to hear from him. I think if he would have said what I wanted to hear, which is, I love you, please come home, I probably would have said, you know, fuck you. So I don't know what I wanted at that time. I wanted my mom and my dad to understand what I'd been through, and who can understand that?
Today's episode is brought to you by Caliper. There is nothing better at the end of a stressful day or an overwhelming week than unwinding with a warm tea and a little CBD added to help me relax and sink into a calm mood. Caliper CBD powder is the only clinically proven fast-acting CBD. Unlike CBD oils, Caliper CBD powder is completely tasteless and mixes easily in any food or drink. Caliper was developed by food science experts with decades of experience and rigorously tested for purity and quality. Caliper packets have precisely 20 milligrams in each packet of Caliper CBD and delivers 30 times more CBD in the first 30 minutes versus CBD oil. Caliper is honestly quite amazing. I've had CBD in many forms, gummies, drinks, and edibles, but Caliper has really helped me feel calm over these summer days and has helped me sleep more easily. I've been surprised by how relaxing it is. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code HAPPENING at trycaliper.com/happening. You can try Caliper CBD risk-free for 30 days. And if you don't love it, they'll give you a full refund. That's trycaliper.com/happening. Don't forget promo code HAPPENING for 20% off your first order.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
At that time, things were still happening. Not every day, but on a regular basis, a couple times a week. I recall this phase, like 5 years after this process happened, where it got particularly bad again. Every night, if I didn't kneel by my bed and pray for safety, all this shit would happen. You know, most days, I don't know if God exists. You know, I've been through my own process with God and finally just had to walk away from everything. And I feel like now in my life, I'm starting to pick up the spiritual elements that I want to keep and kind of ridding myself of the religious components that I don't want to keep. I just remember that for me, reaching out and asking for help from the divine worked, because when I didn't kneel by my bed and pray, it would happen. And when I did, it wouldn't happen. So I don't know what that means. And I don't even know if there was a spiritual element or if that was just my, you know, my mind adapting. I don't know. At some point, this shift occurred. It happened in me, and it was 8 or 9 years after all this stuff started. I just began doubting my dad's involvement in this, that he had sexually abused me. I remember just kind of looking back and seeing those puzzle pieces and how I put them together, and it made perfect sense to me why I believed that. After I sent the letter, I told myself I was not going to forgive my father until I knew exactly what had happened. A number of years passed after that, I kind of arrived at this place. I realized for myself that I had become willing to move on whether or not I even know. I didn't want to be stuck in that loop of never speaking to my father again because I don't know, and if I don't know, I can't forgive and let it go. And that's what started the shift. After all these years, it just didn't make sense to me anymore. And so I reached out to my parents again, and we started talking. And I remember getting off a plane, driving a rented car to go see them for the first time in a decade. And I pulled off the freeway and I sat there because a half hour from their house because I was so scared. A half hour later, I'm walking into their house, a place I'd never been before. There's these photos on the walls that I'd never seen. 10 years, just gone. And all that anger that I had, all that hatred and resentment that I had, all that fear that I had, it was just gone. A key component, really, for me of coming back together with my parents is I ended up getting this job for a while at this residential facility for kids. These were all kids who had been pulled out of the home for some sort of abuse and neglect. And I worked there for about a year and a half. And I remember one day I just grabbed all the files because they were open for us, the workers there, to read, and just read through some of the horrible things that these kids went through. Kids were rated on a scale of how difficult they were to work with, with respect to trying to place them in homes. And these were all the most challenging kids. And there was something that put a lot of things into perspective for me. I think I had so much resentment thinking that my life as a white suburban kid was the worst that it could possibly be. And working with these kids, my history and how horrible I thought it was, at least on the outside, paled in comparison to what these kids had gone through. And that didn't diminish the drama that I, the trauma that I had experienced myself, because everybody's experience is different. But it really allowed me to see my parents for who they were. That was such a key part of me saying, you know what? This is bullshit. It's time for me to step up and say, regardless of what happened, and I don't believe this happened anymore, Dad. I don't believe that you were involved, but I see my life in clear focus now, and it's my job to take that step. And people who know about that part of my life have asked me, do you ever still wonder if your dad was involved, you know? And I really don't. There's not a doubt in my mind. I'm not clear that I wasn't sexually abused. I am clear that it wasn't my father. That's one of the unanswered questions. You know, one of them is, you know, what the fuck was that all about? And one of them was there sexual abuse somewhere in my past that I don't remember, that I was too young, that didn't involve my dad, but could have involved, you know, an uncle or someone else. But what I don't know to this day is what all of that was. It wasn't a day, it wasn't a month, it wasn't a year, it was 10 years of my life, separated from my family, you know, severely depressed, hiding out, embarrassed, ashamed, just frightened. My first authentic relationship came 6 years after this process started. And like my first girlfriend, I feel like I married a woman that was so like my mom. And I feel like a failure sometimes looking back on it, that I didn't see that before. but we have this beautiful daughter, and I love her like I've loved nobody else in the world. That makes everything worth it for me. I think having a child brings so much of this into perspective for me too. I couldn't understand what it was like for my parents to have their son say, "I want no relationship with you." And now being a father, I understand how painful that must have been for them. So my dad now is in the fairly advanced stages of Alzheimer's. And we've just had a great relationship for the last 15 years or so. But about a year and a half ago, he found the letter that I sent him. And he didn't remember that we had resolved this thing together. He told my mom that I had written him this awful letter about something that I thought he did. It just brought everything to the surface again. My mom told me to call my dad, and we talked on the phone for between a half hour and 45 minutes, me trying to convince him over and over again that I didn't believe that anymore. Shortly after that, my mom got rid of the letter so that wouldn't happen again. So as far as my life now, I mean, I'm turning 50 this year, and that scares me a little bit for a number of reasons. I think it scares me for the reasons it scares other people, but I think especially because of, with relation to my story, I think throughout this whole period, I really didn't think I was going to make it to 40. So I always felt like I was going to die young, even when I was in high school. And so I feel like I haven't really been preparing in my life for, you know, what happens when I'm 50? What happens when I'm 60, you know? And so everything feels wide open right now because I'm looking at my life and going, you know, what am I supposed to do now? About halfway through that decade, I was alone at a friend's house. They had guns, and I pulled out one of their guns, and I just put it under my chin, at my throat, and I just sat there. And I really thought at that time that life was never going to get better. I feel like I struggle with a suicidal thought a couple times a week, like maybe I should just. Still, and it doesn't hold the power that it used to have. And I've made a commitment to myself not to go there. The biggest aspect of that is my relationship with my daughter. But I've never been able to shake entirely this sense that things are bad right now and they're not going to get better. You know, and I can put that on my daughter, but it's, you know, it's not my daughter's job to give my life meaning either. I look back on that period. I think what I do have is the songs and the stories and the poetry I wrote through that period. I'm a musician and a writer, and those little scrawlings just kept me alive. I'm looking at this book right now called Divine Madness, of just this whole list of people whose names you know who either killed themselves or succumbed to their own madness. Just artists and musicians and actors. I'm not comparing me to them to say my level of artistry is there. I can just so relate to that feeling underneath that just holds on and holds on and holds on, that just says, you're not good. You have nothing good to say. Your life is going to be nothing and things will never get better. That's still there. And I've learned how to live with that. I've learned how to see it and recognize it for what it is. So let's just make this thing work, you know? And on the shitty days, let's make this thing work. And on the good days, let's enjoy the connection that we feel. And the hardest part is I still don't have any answers about that part of my life. I can see that thing disguised as my dad sitting on my couch in that dream. That was 26 years ago. And I see it like it's yesterday. And I just... I have the same question I had then. What came into my house that night? What was that that was throwing me around on the bed all those years? Is that memories? Is that demons? Is that something from another world or a dimension? Was it just all in my head? All these years later, I still don't know. I don't talk about this so much anymore. And I have close friends who have no idea that that 10 years of my life was that. But I also don't feel limited by my story anymore. You know, I think throughout my 20s and 30s, what happened at that time really defined me, you know? And I don't feel that anymore. As a matter of fact, I journaled extensively through that whole time. And what I did is write on sheets of paper. I didn't have journal books. I wrote on lined paper and put it in these file folders. And when the file folder would get full, I'd pull it out and I'd put it in a box and I'd start another file folder. That stack of file folders was 2 or 3 feet high. I was literally carrying around this story. Like every time I'd move, there's the box with all the stuff, you know, all my story. And one day I took those boxes and boxes and boxes of file folders down to the beach. And I just had a bonfire by myself and I burned it all. I just sat there like by myself, just feeding the fire with my story, just taking a handful of pages and putting it in. And I remember seeing certain pages that I recognized, you know, and a couple things I saved out, stuff that I wrote that I wanted to keep. But I really watched the actual story of my life burn. And it took probably 2 hours, maybe three. I don't remember how long I was there. But at the end, it was just gone.
From Wondery, you're listening to This Is Actually Happening. If you love what we do, please rate and review the show. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. You can also join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. By supporting them, you help us bring you our shows for free. I'm your host, Whit Misseldine. Today's episode was co-produced by me, with special thanks to the This Is Actually Happening team, including Andrew Waits and Ellen Westberg. The intro music features the song Illabai by Tipper. You can join the This Is Actually Happening community on the discussion group on Facebook or at Actually Happening on Instagram.
On the show's website, thisisactuallyhappening.com, you can find out more about the podcast, contact us with any questions, submit your own story, or visit the store, where you can find This Is Actually Happening designs on stickers, t-shirts, wall art, hoodies, and more. That's thisisactuallyhappening.com. And finally, if you'd like to become an ongoing supporter of what we do, go to patreon.com/happening. Even $2 to $5 a month goes a long way to support our vision. Thank you for listening. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to This Is Actually Happening ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.